This is the Overclocked Podcast, a regular dose of video game music and conversation from ocremix.org. This week, we shine a spotlight on the stage of Video Games Live with a rock orchestra playlist, plus an interview from Tommy Tallarico himself, and Jeff McMillan brings us a brand new edition of A Personal Note. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I bring you our interview with Tommy Tallarico.
So that was my Tommy impression. On a scale from 1 to 10, how accurate do you think it is?
That was my Castlevania impression. On a scale of 1 to Vampire, how impressive do you think that was?
I give both of these 10s and Vampires all around. I think knocking it out of the park this week.
Okay, excellent. Hello. Yes, we're going to have an interview with Tommy Tallarico this week. This is the Overclock Podcast, episode 68. That has some significance somewhere to someone.
Probably. it has significance to me because it's just been hanging out in the show notes for a long time.
Yeah, wow. This interview with Tommy Tallarico happened a long time ago.
It did. We had a lot of interviews to burn through. And it almost coincided with our trip to Video Games Live.
Yeah, pretty close.
It was very close. I actually recorded this like a month before we, went to see them again. So,
yeah, it's been sitting there for a while, but finally we can bring you, Tommy Tallarico interview. I hear it's really good. I'm not there for it.
It's great. I'm very excited to debut it. In fact, I decided to split it into two parts because here's a fact: Tommy Tallarico can talk a lot. So it doesn't take much much prompting to get him to go on about it's 17 topics.
Sometime you need to get him and Laura in the same interview.
Oh man. So what I feel like that would be is just a long stream of Tommy Tallarico talking, punctuated by large bursts of laughter from Laura while I just sit back and watch the fireworks.
That sounds great. I mean, that's basically Video Games Live, so...
That's a good point.
Except replace laughter with flute.
With flute. Also, Jeff McMillan, our newest segmenter, has returned for his second edition of A Personal Note. Brian, do you know who Soji Meguro is?
Nope.
Oh, you don't? Well, let me just say that I think we should rename this segment for this week, A Persona Note.
Oh, did he do music to the popular game Shin Megami Tensei Persona 7?
I don't think that's accurate very much.
That's not very accurate.
I would not give that a 10 or a Vampire on the scale of accuracism.
Did he do music for Death Note?
No, he did. He's done music for Attack Persona on Titan? And stuff. You'll learn all about it soon in our Personal Note segment.
Great.
It's quite interesting.
Speaking of interesting, why don't we go ahead and jump into this week's Remix Rewind?
Can we run it down?
Excuse me, sir. Know your place.
Sorry.
Where we run down the latest from ocremix.org.
I can dig it. Let's look at the
From OCR's Final Fantasy IX tribute album, Worlds Apart, comes the energetic remix Vamo a la Flamenco. Andy P., Dan Bryant, and Fishy join forces as a jazzy acoustic trio and weave a seamless, friendly atmosphere that carries itself with a cool, confident swagger. "Hey man," says the song, motioning to an empty spot around the campfire, "grab a drink and come hang out."
The character selection music from Super Smash Bros. Melee is one of the most energetic tracks from that game. But remixer Outset Initiative shows us that there are many sides to every tune in their sleek, chilled-out variation, Choose Your Character. Though the melody remains, the frantic, get-pumped air of the original is transformed into smooth piano and a guitar, and a touch of saxophone for good measure.
Remixers In Wake and Argyle team up on another remix from Final Fantasy IX, Worlds Apart. This time, we fly into a prog rock exploration on the tune, with tons of artful flourishes, fearless synth, and some very smooth mixing. The song dares to experiment with its own identity, and the source material takes it all in stride.
You know what's scary? Dancing! Or so remixer Just Coffee seems to think with Vampathrillic, a Monster Bash mashup out of some of Castlevania's greatest hits. Just set your mind stage with an ensemble of happening zombies shaking and grooving to these funky beats. Got it? Great! Now enjoy! Remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org.
You've heard the latest remixes from OCR, and now it's time to hear the remixes remixed with the Duosis Recuts from JH Sounds. Could it all be great, but your picture on my wall, it reminds me that it's not so bad, it's not so bad. My tears don't cold, I'm wondering why I got out of bed at all. The morning rain clouds up my window, and I can't see it all. Yeah. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Intune Interview. It's the part of the show where we talk to music makers about the music that they make. No surprise, it's me, Steven, again. And I'm really happy today because we're finally joined by Tommy Tallarico. Hey, Tommy.
Woohoo! Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. It's good to see you.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's good to see your profile pic, at least. I mean, we are on Skype, right. But still, close enough. So some people might know you from, what, Earthworm Jim? You worked on Advent Rising, right?
Yeah. Earthworm Jim to Advent Rising. That's like the biggest seller and the worst seller right there in the same sentence. Good job. Wait, no, hold on. That would be, worst would be Color a Dinosaur.
I'm very glad you brought that up.
Yes, Color Dinosaur would be the worst and probably the most biggest seller, but probably Tony Hawk Pro Skater. That's I think that did about 30 mm-hmm. million units. But
but I mean, I think that at least nowadays, you're probably most well-known for Video Games Live. Is that fair to say?
Ladies and gentlemen! Boys and girls! Please, put your hands together for the one, the only, Castlevania!
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's been my focus for the last 15 years. I mean, I started writing video game music in 1991.
Yeah.
And first game I ever worked on was the original Prince of Persia with Jordan Mechner. And then because the first 4 years of my career, I was at Virgin Games, Virgin Interactive. And so Prince of Persia and Global Gladiators and Cool Spot and Disney's Aladdin and Terminator and RoboCop versus Terminator. Those were all games I'd worked on there. And then after 4 years there, we all decided to kind of just start our own company. So my best friend, David Perry, he started Shiny Entertainment. And I started Tommy Tallarico Studios because a lot of other game companies were trying to go, you know, get me to go work for them because I had won at that point Best Music of the Year award like 4 years in a row each year. So I decided instead of just leaving Virgin and going to work for another company that I'd start my own company and go work for all of them. So when I had left Virgin in 94 and I had at that point as well, I had just come out with the very first worldwide released video game soundtrack album. On Capitol Records, and it was Tommy Tallarico's Greatest Hits, Volume 1, woohoo! So I'd just come out with an album at the same time as well. So, when I left Virgin, I was doing the Madden games for EA. I was working on the Mortal Kombat games and Blitz for Midway. Then we did Earthworm Jim with Playmates, things like Skeleton Warriors, and then a few years later, the Tony Hawk stuff. So, you know, I started working with all the different video game companies out there, which was cool. And then in 1995, as I was still, you know, full on doing all the video game stuff, I was asked to host a television show about video games, which was syndicated worldwide. It's called The Electric Playground. And then we spun off a second show from that called Judgment Day, which was like a reviews show, but it was known as Reviews on the Run in Canada. And so I did that from 1995 till about 2007, all while I was still, you know, composing video game music and doing sound design and stuff. Metroid Prime had come out in that time that I worked on, and some of the Sonic games, the crappy ones, different stuff like that. So then I kind of had to leave the show in 2007 because at that point, Video Games Live had taken off. So I started Video Games Live in 2002. And it took me 3 years to put on the first show at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic. And everybody, of course, thought that was crazy. You know, like people who go to the symphony don't play video games, and people who play video games don't go to a symphony. So you're like totally doubly screwed. Mm-hmm. Like no one's going to show up to your stupid thing. And before we had done Video Games Live, like there had never been anything like this ever in the world. Now, there had been some Japanese game concerts for like, you know, the Dragon Quest series and, you know, back as far back as 1985. But they were very there was no video screens. There was no lighting. There was no synchronization. It was just, you know, kind of playing very classical, traditional style video game music only, you know, in the, you know, only in Japan. So when we played that first show at the Hollywood Bowl, a lot of people don't realize this, but it was the very first time anywhere in the world that anyone had performed even some of the big games, the Japanese games like Sonic the Hedgehog, Kingdom Hearts, Metal Gear Solid. You know, and of course, we also did the world premiere ever of Halo and Warcraft and Myst. So it was a big deal. It was the first time we'd used, anyone had used video screens of the show. And because I wanted to create something that was like exciting, I wanted to combine rock and roll. I'm like, look, I don't want young people to go to a symphony show and be bored because it's just a symphony. I want to make it rock and roll. I want to have video screens and lasers and rock and roll lighting and special effects and interactive elements with the crowd and a stage show production. And I want there to be comedy in it. And I want it to be fun. So let me take all of this kind of old, traditional, powerful, symphonic music that's been around for hundreds of years, but then combine that with the future, with technology, with amazing visuals, with the power and emotion, all of the stuff that people my age and younger grew up on, right? You know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. I'm 49 years old now. And you know, we were the first generation to grow up on video games and MTV and using computers in our daily lives. And you know, when we went to rock concerts like Van Halen and Journey and The Who and Zeppelin, it was tons of lights everywhere. And, you know, so again, that's what we were used to. So I wanted to create something for everybody, not just for hardcore gamers. And I certainly didn't want to take the music to Halo and then, like, you know, kind of water it down. My goal was always to start with what the composer intended and then pile on top of that, you know? Right. So when we do stuff like God of War and Halo and some of the Warcraft pieces or League of Legends, these had like already been recorded by 100, 200 piece orchestras. So that's where we start. And then, boom, I just want to make it like even that much more giant and huge. And then for the games that never had live orchestras or, you know, guitars and stuff in them, things like Street Fighter and Mega Man and Castlevania and Metroid and Zelda and Mario and Tetris and all these Street Fighter, all these amazing games, you know, to bring that into, you know, an arrangement that is gigantic, but plus adding in the drums, bass, guitar, and stuff like that. But there are things that exist like that, though, you know, like mm-hmm. for example, Journey, you know, which we play, a song like Journey is very string oriented. It's very beautiful. It's slow. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to turn that into a big rock and roll piece. But, you know, when Austin Wintry recorded Journey, he had a certain amount of instruments. Well, we're doubling that. You know, we're making it even more big and grandiose, and to have the lights all moving in time and this beautiful, as they do this beautiful dance along with the video and everything, you know, it's mesmerizing. And the whole reason behind all that is that, you know, I created Video Games Live for two reasons. One, I wanted to prove to the world how culturally mm-hmm. significant and artistic video games have become. But I also wanted to help usher in a whole new generation of young people to appreciate the arts. People don't realize how big and how popular video game music is until they come to one of our shows and feel like, you know, they're part of something that's bigger, you know?
And I feel like a lot of people have had that experience of bringing people with them to a Video Games Live performance that yeah. don't know a thing about games. And it's almost easier than trying to explain to them why it's important or why you play them or just bring them.
Well, I can tell you that most of the letters and emails and social media messages that we get after the show are yeah. from non-gamers, are from, like, you know, the moms who brought the
great.
Neighborhood kids, or the grandparents who are bringing their grandson to the symphony for the first time or whatever. And they're the ones most blown away and surprised because, like, you know, guys like me and you and everybody who's listening to this podcast, we mm-hmm. know how awesome the music to Final Fantasy is, and we know right. how epic Skyrim is, and how amazing Zelda is, and it means something to us, right? But for people who have no clue, who haven't played a video game since, like, you know, Pac-Man in 1982 or something, Miss
yeah.
Pac-Man, for them to come to the show and hear music like Skyrim and Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts and the Warcraft stuff and Zelda, like, it blows them away, because and they see the visuals and the beautiful art and the way we present the show, and they're like, I get it now. Now I know why my kids are so much into video games. Thank you so mm-hmm. much. You've opened my eyes to a whole new world that I never really knew existed or didn't think it was this big. So,
yeah.
you know, that's the cool part. And I'll tell you, the best part, though, is that a lot of those parents will also say, by the way, we're all sitting around the breakfast table this morning, and my 8-year-old daughter, said that she wants to start taking violin lessons so she can learn the music to Kingdom Hearts or Zelda or Sonic, whatever.
That's awesome.
And that's amazing, right? It just shows you how important video games are. And I did a whole TED talk on this. If people are interested in checking it out, you can, you know, it's on YouTube. You just put in Tommy Tallarico and TED talk. Art in disguise is what I called it. And you know how
nice.
You know, art is how people are inspired to create because of video games. You're a perfect person, right? A perfect example. You're doing this podcast now because of your love and passion for video games and for video game music, you know? So it really is. You know, the other thing too that I say to a lot of people, and like, for non-gamers who, like, will interview me around the world, you know, as we travel around mm-hmm. with the show, you know, people always ask me, well, how is it so big? Why is it, you know, you're still going after 15 years? And the reason for that is that I think is that, you know, when you play a video game, you become that character, and the music becomes a part of your life as you're creating that character, as you're going around battling people. That's your battle music. When you open that chest and you get a song, that becomes your reward, your thing, right? It's very different than like film music. If you think about film music, you know, you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark and it's dun 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 dun. Like that's Indiana Jones's theme, right? Darth Vader walks through the door in Star Wars, dun 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 dun. That's Darth Vader's theme. But when you're playing games, video games, and that music, and you are controlling that character, and that music is your music. You're not watching somebody else. It becomes a part of you. And people get so emotionally attached with this music, more so than any other music ever in existence. Think about that for a second, right? Because, you know, you take up a movie music, for example, right? You take the music to Avatar. You know, you've seen Avatar once. You heard the music. You know, beautiful graphics, beautiful storyline, great acting, amazing special effects, great sound design, the whole thing, the worlds, everything. But hum me the music to Avatar. You saw it for 2 hours, and 80% of it was being talked over. Now let's compare that to, like, I don't know, Warcraft or League of Legends, where people are playing 20, 30 hours a week, you know, and the music is being blasted into your brain. And what we do is not background music. It's like we get the action scene of a movie every level, every time.
Yeah.
So this movie is out front. It's in your face. I call it foreground music, not background music. And just people don't even realize it. Like, I tell people about something like MAGFest. I'm like, about 60,000 people show up for the last, you know, and I think we're going, 15 years now. They show up in Virginia or Maryland or wherever it is. And like 50,000, 60,000 people will show up, and it's video game cover bands. And people are like, what? That's impossible. It's like, no, this is a thing. I always tell people who don't know about video game music, I always say, look, here's the deal. You don't know video game music because it's not mainstream, right? Video game music is, let's be honest, video game music is pretty much still underground. But here's the thing. Everybody under 30 is underground. It's still underground, but everybody's underground, you know?
That's the best way I think I've ever heard anyone explain the phenomenon of video game music.
Right?
How do you think that has changed since you started? I mean, I'm sure you've heard from hundreds, maybe thousands of people coming up to you, you know, from their perspectives of knowing nothing or knowing everything about games. Do you feel like the number of people is shrinking who are just oblivious?
No. Because there's so many, you know, billions of people on the planet, right? And they're all not listening to video game music. So every show we do, we find a new, like I just did a show this Saturday, Springfield, Massachusetts, the place where I grew up. It was like a homecoming show for me. It was great. I've traveled all over the world, but I had never played the place where I was born and raised with the symphony that I used to watch as a kid.
Wow.
So it was a really emotional, you know, incredible show. A lot of the people in the orchestra had no idea what to expect, you know, and some of the, like, you know, the symphony subscribers who, you know, older people. And again, they're the ones most blown away. The reviewer of the newspaper, the big newspaper in town, said it was one of the greatest symphony shows he's ever seen. And he's been doing this professionally for 40 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because we're bringing a new twist to it. And again, people who don't know video game music, they might be coming into the show thinking like, oh, what are they going to do? Boop, 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 bloop for 2 hours, right? You know, they're going to be hitting, like, you know, pizzicatos on it. You know, but then when they get in and they hear Journey and Shadow of the Colossus and Zelda and Final Fantasy and the Warcraft and all this amazing stuff, they're blown away by the quality of music. So yeah, it's been quite the adventure.
What happens next on this adventure? Tune in next week to hear the thrilling conclusion to our interview with Tommy Tallarico.
Howdy, folks. I'm Jeff McMillan, and this is a personal note. Personal Note shows a composer's works throughout his or her career and catalogs the evolution of his or her compositional techniques. For this week's segment, we will look at the life and career of Shoji Meguro, the composer for a number of games created by Atlus. Shoji Meguro was born on June 4th, 1971, in Tokyo. His parents owned and ran a small factory for their family business, so he was exposed to technology at an early age. While he was still young, Meguro-san developed an affinity for electronic instruments and wrote music on an electone organ. Among his influences were Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, jazz fusion, and even J-pop. He excelled at performing the music he wrote on the synthesizer and guitar in a couple of bands, even while getting a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and a master's degree in hydrodynamics. Shoji Meguro wasn't able to find stable work in these fields, however, so he turned to his musical talents to find work. Despite not having a home gaming console growing up, he decided to write music for games, and he got that opportunity when he was hired by Atlus in 1995. Here was where Shoji Meguro got to write tracks for Revelations Persona, the first game in the Persona series, which is a sub-branch of the Megami Tensei series, which was released for the Sony PlayStation in 1996. He developed his signature rock style and wrote The Aria of the Soul, an operatic aria that would be later reinterpreted in multiple games throughout the Persona series. Let's listen to the famous Aria of the Soul. Shoji Meguro's style would be further developed thanks to his next two projects, Devil Summoner Soul Hackers for the Sega Saturn in 1997, and Machin X for the Dreamcast in 1999. Particularly for Machin X, Meguro-san was able to delve into his techno and hard rock roots, since it was an action game as opposed to most of Atlus's other titles, which are mostly RPGs. Here's an example of a track that illustrates this, Brain Jack. Atlus would continue to keep Meguro-san busy with work on a handful of titles over the next 5 years, such as Machin Shao Demon Sword in 2001, Shin Megami Tensei III Nocturne in 2003, and Nocturne Maniacs and Digital Devil Saga in 2004. In Digital Devil Saga, he was able to really fuel his passions for a more industrial flavor of rock and embrace the possibilities that opened up with the hardware capabilities of the PlayStation 2. One of the tracks he wrote to demonstrate this was River of Samsara. Shoji Meguro would work on the sequel, Digital Devil Saga 2, a year later, before taking a break from the Megami Tensei series to write the music for Trauma Center Under the Knife, a simulation game for the Nintendo DS in 2005. Here, he was able to alter his style to suit the fact that this was not another of the myriad of games in the Megami Tensei series. We can hear this deviation with a track called The Cutting Edge of Medicine. In 2006, we see Meguro-san getting back into the saddle again with the release of games in the Trauma Center, Devil Summoner, and Megami Tensei series alongside the game that firmly placed him on the map, Persona 3. This crowning achievement would see a more prominent use of vocal tracks in addition to the signature sound that Shoji Meguro had developed over the previous 10 years. One of the tracks that shows this is Mass Destruction. There's a wake and a breeze now, face reality. Never be charity. The enemy, your buddy, covers whole society. Damn right, mommy's not here, gonna fight all night. Right here, shadow 10 o'clock direction. Seize the moment, this destroy the nation. You ride slow motion, give me motivation. Get out now, and then I'm arrival. Round up around, spit out, all over. Rhyme like a roller stone, come in the crowd. Watch out the moon, that this too loud. Get what this sound, if I'm full ground. So round up, don't ease your pace, cause enemies brutal. Form of the truth, there ain't no truth. You're the only one, one world, one. The hits from Atlus just kept on coming as the company continued to utilize the talents of Shoji Meguro to write the soundtracks for several more games. Trauma Center Second Opinion, Shin Megami Tensei Imagine, both of which were in 2006, Persona 3 FES in 2007, Persona 4 and Devil Summoner 2, Raiduo Kuzunoha vs. King Abaddon in 2008. Persona 4 continued the musical trends from its predecessor while offering a much broader mix of genres in order for Meguro-san to bring something new to the table. Such an example can be found in the track Pursuing My True Self. Shoji Meguro stayed busy over the next 3 years with more titles from Atlus, including Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey in 2009, Trauma Team in 2010, and Catherine in 2011. Catherine was a welcome departure from the Megami Tensei series in that it was a brand new intellectual property, which allowed him to create a new audio brand while maintaining his jazz fusion and classical roots. One track that illustrates this is Stray Sheep. Thank you. Kagero-san worked on several ports and remakes until Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker in 2015 and Persona 5 last year. Record Breaker once again maintained that characteristic sound that he is known for, which can be found in tracks like Countdown. Shoji Meguro's next big project is called Project ReFantasy. Keep an eye out for more details about this project as news is released. Until next time, take it easy, everybody.
Like this, like that. I like it.
Boy, howdy.
You know what's great?
What?
Phoenix Down for my birthday.
Uh-huh.
Left a message on my Facebook page saying, "What a birthday. What a birthday."
That's funny.
That was my exact response.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Overclock Podcast. If you want to find out more about OC Remix or find my show notes, you
can head over. How smoothly and professionally you handle yourself on this program.
Yeah. You can head over to www.ocremix.org.
Yeah, another good idea would be going to twitter.com. Yeah. We are OCR Podcast over there, and you can have fun with us and, you know, trade ideas and, you know, chat.
Yeah, and you can send us emails at podcast@ocremix.org.
Yep, that's the best way to get in touch with us. And don't forget about our Discord channel, where we have lots of Discord. Oh, that's why they call it that. It finally makes sense. I'd also like to thank everyone who made this episode possible. Not only Tommy Tallarico for half of an interview, but JH Sounds for doing our Duosis recuts, Sin Shottis for writing most of the Remix Rewinds this week. We filled in for one. And of course, Jeff McMillan for his segment. Wow, that's a lot of people.
Wow, that is a lot of people. Well, you know what else we have a lot of? Playlist submissions.
You know what? Wait, you know what? I'd like to thank you, too, for being co-host.
Oh, thanks. So, true story. I forgot to tell you happy birthday yesterday.
True. That is a true story.
Because we were celebrating it on the weekend, and I was busy, like, prepping for that and doing some other stuff, so I kind of forgot that it was your actual birthday.
Mm-hmm. You did.
And we never really talked during the day because we were both doing other stuff all day. That's true. So I forgot to tell you
happy birthday. And all my friends in the world, everyone in the world, one by one, called me personally on the telephone.
Every single one of them.
And they all said, what a birthday, except you.
Except me. So happy belated birthday. Thank you for being co-host as well.
Thanks.
And I was doing some awesome transition about how we have a ton of playlist submissions this week, and I really mean that. We have like 20. So you didn't get in this week, don't feel too terrible. You had a lot of competition, but you still lost. And on that note, we're jumping in to the playlist.
The playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is... Rock Orchestra! I'm Tommy Tallarico again!
High and Broken, from Sonic and the Secret Rings and submitted by Square Evil.
showdown with a volcanic Entei from Pokemon Super Mystery Dungeon and submitted by Tamias222.
Focus, originally from Super Hexacon, remixed by Brave Wave and submitted by Kyle J. CRB.
From Heroes of the Storm and submitted by Andres.
Impresario, originally from Final Fantasy VI, remixed by Jake Kaufman and Tommy Pedrini, and submitted by Eric.
SKO from Xenoblade Chronicles X and submitted by Zachary.
That Remains, originally from Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, remixed by Zach Parrish, featuring Jeff Ball, and submitted by Zach Parrish. Victory is inevitable, from Emperor Battle for Dune, and submitted by Lazy Gecko. One Who Gets in Our Way, from Xenoblade Chronicles and submitted by Snurf Snarf.
from Ace Combat Assault and submitted by Carlos.
You've been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is Town Themes. Wake up those sleepy villages for some lively music. To submit your suggestions,
or just hail and well met,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast, email us at podcast@ocremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom?
Then from the ground came the most awful sound. And I saw her then, Maria lying there. Someone had stabbed her, and her time was at an end. And then I ran and ran and ran and ran.